Good morning, Connecticut. And to our friends across the Sound, it's Director of Public Affairs, John Vokette. Thanks for tuning in to Connoisseur Media's award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. Today, we're checking in with the Executive Director of Bridgeport's Green Village Initiative. You remember them. They've been guests before on For the People. Well, they're currently working with the city to try and preserve their reservoir community farm and community gardens. We're going to learn more about progress to that end and all the ways folks can get involved, even if it just means planting a few tomato plants or sending out a few emails. Then we're going to stick around the Park City and meet two individuals heading up the Bridgeport United Coalition. We're going to find out how this organization is helping reduce tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use among youth and to make Bridgeport a safer, healthier, and drug-free city. Then we're going to wrap inviting you to celebrate women and girls throughout the region as the Fairfield County Community Foundation readies for its Fund for Women and Girls celebration coming up later this week. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Vokette, right after this reminder. You know, there's always something wild happening at Connecticut's only zoo. So have you heard about a garden of glass? Well, this breathtaking exhibit has been extended at the Beardsley Zoo in Bridgeport through the end of April due to popular demand. Master glass artist Peter Greenwood has created a display of 500 pieces of his colorful glass artwork in the Victorian greenhouse, which is approved COVID safety rules in place. So come and enjoy this very special exhibition through April 30th and find out all the exciting happenings shaping up for summer by visiting beardsleyzoo.org. Well, we would love so much to be out with our guest this morning, kicking off the program on the grounds of the Reservoir Community Farm in Bridgeport. But as it stands, we're still working to try to stay safe in a COVID world. And so we are visiting with Ellie Angram on the phone. She's the relatively new executive director of the Green Village Initiative in the Reservoir Community Farm. And Ellie, welcome to the program. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much, John, and good morning, and thank you for having me.
So we haven't really been able to meet you yet since you came onto the job, and I think we were pretty courteous in giving you a long landing zone to get ready for probably what's going to end up, I hope, being a long period of repeated visits with us here on For the People and For the People visiting you and the farm. So first of all, just a quick bit about yourself as you come on to this new responsibility here.
Sure. I really, truly hope that we'll have some time to be in space together coming into a new job, as a lot of folks and even most of my team did during the pandemic has been really interesting. But it's forced us to be more thoughtful about how we connect and the ways we connect. And I think in a lot of ways, we're a lot more intentional than we would have been pre-pandemic. And yeah, that can be a good thing.
Yeah. Well, are you a farmer by heritage, or what's the background that brought you into this? Because it's not just about farming, as we're going to hear. It's a lot about, civic engagement, government relations, mm-hmm. PR. It's not just about getting your hands dirty and planting some tomatoes.
Although, man, is that a great part of the job. But you and I are both descended from farmers, as are all of our listeners. Mm-hmm. I mean, most of our ancestors were farmers, but in the past several generations, my family stopped being farmers. We moved to cities, and mm-hmm. And so I'm really I became a first generation farmer again, and I did that by going up to Maine and learning my craft up there, but always wanting to come back to my home city of Bridgeport. I love Bridgeport. My family moved here in 99 when I was in elementary school. Mm-hmm. And it has this really, really, really meaningful place in my heart that wherever I go in the world, Bridgeport will always be home. And so it was exciting to me to be able to come back and discover for the first time for myself Green Village Initiative and hear there's a farm and you can actually just go and meet new people and get your hands in the soil. And it's a thriving and exciting nonprofit that you should be a part of, Ellie. That's what a lot of my friends were saying. Mm-hmm. So I felt very blessed in 2015 to begin as a coordinator. I worked my way to become the farm manager at GVI and was very blessed and lucky to be able to be in that position for many years, managing both the farm program that we have at Reservoir Community Farm and our amazing youth leadership program, which is goes through the summer and the year, bringing young people into this work in the food system to change it, not only through growing food, but kind of growing leadership within themselves. And I went on to also manage our community garden program. We have 12 community gardens across the city that each have their own really distinct flavor and personality based on the neighborhood that they're in and the neighbors that are working within it, that I love so much. And so those are three of the four programs at GVI that I've managed. The fourth is our incredible school garden program with gardens at 23 of our public schools that are operating as outdoor classrooms and really engaging young people in nature, which has never been more important. Now that we're coming out of this year of intense isolation and trauma and excessive screen time, to really engage with the soil. And so our work is really multifaceted. We have folks kind of across the age spectrum working with us, not only to grow food, but to learn about food justice. And it's exciting that we work with everyone from ages 2 to 92 to get involved in our mission to really create a more just food system in Bridgeport.
Yep. Also excited and shout outs to our mutual pal, Michelle McCabe, who is also kind of on board and in some respects kind of an extended co-pilot in that bigger mission to create more food equity in Bridgeport and the region. So great to hear about all that. And I do want to take just a moment to shout out current or past community gardens program and youth leadership partners, Jessica, Robert, and Patrick. Are they past folks involved, or are they still on board or coming into the community gardens program?
Yeah, so Pat had worked with us as a youth in our youth program and worked with us as a coordinator for the year, which was very exciting. We're now rehiring for that role. If folks are interested, they can go to our website to learn more. Mm-hmm. And Rob, who previously had worked with us as an AmeriCorps VISTA member, so he was just a service position when GVI couldn't afford program managers, has now come back to GVI years later to be in this position and lead, which is so exciting. Yeah. And Jessica Ramos is leading our community garden program. So shout out to her she's bringing an incredible insight in her past work in health equity and language justice to our program. And I'll give also shout outs to the rest of our team, which are amazing. We've got Alex doing our social media. So if folks want to follow us on Instagram or Facebook, they can interact with Alex there. Mm. Brianna Wall, who's leading us up as our director of operations. Charlene, who's rebuilding school gardens all this month. And we've also got our amazing farm manager, Farmer Kat. She and Farmer Richard will be the faces that you see if you come to our farm on a volunteer Saturday and get your hands dirty with us.
Great. Well, based on the weather we've been having over the past couple of weeks, including on here on taping day on the 8th, it's an exciting time, I'm sure, most for the younger kids in the farm to school cooperative who are maybe for the very first time in their lives finding out that they can put a tiny little thing in the ground and it'll end up as what they've been seeing their entire lives kind of presented to them on a grocery shelf or in a vegetable and fruit aisle at the store. So
I think that really great. You nailed it, that there's a really powerful element to being able to see that thing wrapped in plastic has its own life cycle, and it's not so different from my own. And not only that, but I have power in this. Yeah. So I think that the act of putting the seed in the ground, it connects us to something really spiritual and ancestral, but it also connects us back to the most important thing that we try to drive home at GVI, which is that we all have power to change the food system and find ways to make sure that less of our food is that, you know, wrapped in plastic thing
that we see. Yeah.
But also that we all have access to the things we want. A big part of this is that we should have choice in being able to find the food that nourishes us, that reminds us of our roots and our ancestors, and brings us back to these places that help us feel human again, especially after such a difficult year for us collectively.
And so important when the kind of inexpensive food alternative is on such the opposite side. Fast food, you know, your two for a dollar or dollar menu stuff that you can just drive up and get in the space of 90 seconds or so, you know, being such the quick and easy but ultimately unhealthy choice, versus in the case of Green Village Initiative projects, sometimes just walking across the street in the morning and grabbing a tomato off the vine and walking back in and chopping it up and putting it in your omelet. You guys are doing amazing work, but we want to remind people that we're on the line right now with Ellie Angram. She is the executive director of the Green Village Initiative, which operates Reservoir Community Farm and all of these other wonderful programs we've been hearing about that we do want to be as sustainable as community gardens and this community farm. And right now that is the big project and also occupying a massive amount of your time, Ellie. So the history of this, if I understand correctly, is that in April of 2020, the Bridgeport City Council voted to approve a five-year development plan that included possibly building a library on the land where for the past 9 years Reservoir Community Farm has resided. So fill us in on the top line things that we need to know since then in terms of the history leading up to where we're at today.
Yeah, and before I jump into it, I will name, it's always important for me when we have these land conversations, especially me as a white executive director of a nonprofit, to name that that when we're getting into conversations about land, it's important to name that ours is occupied Paugusset land, and the Paugusset tribe is truly the original stewards of this land, and we feel really honored to be current stewards as farmers. And the land that we are on now on is defined as city-owned land, because Bridgeport has been really gracious in helping us put these garden sites in GVI's history onto Board of Ed land at the schools and on city-owned lots that had not been in development. And so actually each of GVI's gardens is not on land that we own. And Reservoir Community Farm came into being in 2011 after a really, you know, great and collaborative kind of conversation that came between GVI and neighbors in the city, and hundreds of folks from the neighborhood came out to build the beds that we still grow food in today to feed our community. And so our land is really rooted in this community piece. Mm-hmm. But over time, I think what's really important to engage in is that there's always going to be shifting lines on how land should be used. Land in American history signifies wealth and development opportunities. And it's also sometimes difficult to get around the table and see how we should use it from the other person's perspective. And I think that's sort of where we are right now, is that the choice between having to choose between a library and a farm and a neighborhood is a difficult one for anyone to make, but it's especially difficult when you know, the community is not part of that conversation from the beginning. And I think that's kind of where we are right now, is trying to catch our community up to the decision that the city council made to put this money aside to potentially put a library on that property. And not only to catch our community up, but ask our city representatives and the folks at the city to slow down a little bit and let us bring everyone together. We need to be moving at the same speed, the speed of trust, as Adrian Marie Brown called it, in order to move forward in a way that's actually going to be effective. Because we can develop land in Bridgeport in a myriad of ways that we feel like is, you know, good for the community. But if our community, and that really means us as neighbors and even the folks across the street that we don't talk to, if we're not part of that decision, how is that going to change our future trajectory? I think we all have to be at that table.
Well, in the last 3 or 4 minutes that we have with you, Ellie, I know about a month ago you were looking to try to hold a community charrette with the council members Rosalina Christie and McBride to discuss a survey and representing community wishes in the development of a shared plan. Where are you in the process of that?
Yeah, I'm still immensely hopeful that we can have our two esteemed councilwomen come to the table. And I feel really lucky that the library board has been receptive to talking to us and having a conversation about this work that we've done to perform a survey. We've surveyed almost 150 households in the community, and we'll be putting those survey results online because I think data is really important.
Sure.
And it was a randomized survey. It was designed to not have leading questions. And we really just wanted to get a little bit of feedback from the community. And I feel really blessed to have partnership within the library board to talk about this and talk about other options, with all of us understanding that both food and literacy is both vital to our
sure.
city, and also something that's really been systemically not a high priority. And
yeah.
so we want to bring all of these great services, and we're hoping that our council leadership can really come to the space of being able to talk with all of us from a place of trust and hope and wanting to build forward collaboratively.
Well, as someone who spent a lot of time downtown Bridgeport at the library when I worked in downtown Bridgeport, seemingly almost a lifetime ago, back in the late 90s and early 2000s, I certainly came to appreciate the great work of the folks who manage, run, and oversee all of the Bridgeport Library's branches, including the beautiful main center in downtown. And hopeful that and happy to hear that that things are going well, and that there is some like-minded thinking going on between GVI and the library directors. And I know that also one of the concerns was that in the event an eventual relocation of the farm and programs has to happen, you are looking for Bridgeport to also partner in helping provide land and financial support to underwrite that effort. And I guess, you know, while sustainability is key in our minds, that's something that's further on down the road. In the last few moments that we have with you, Ellie, let folks know, wherever they may be listening, how they can support GVI and perhaps advocate on behalf of your effort to preserve the community farm, the Reservoir Community Farm.
Yeah, thank you so much for taking the time to talk today. I would love for folks to, in whatever way, I know we're all a little tapped after 2020 and kind of getting our feet under us, but if folks need to get outside and share in space and share in community really engage, please come to our farm on Saturdays. We're there to talk about this issue, but also to teach farming and get folks excited about food justice and rethinking what the future of Bridgeport can look like as an urban farming and agricultural hub, you know. And I think that to also, if folks are not able to physically get out and share space with us, shoot us an email, info@gogvi, that's info@gogvi.org. We'll put you in touch with Alex, who can let you know about any upcoming meetings that we have. If you can want to follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Green Village Initiative, it's a great way to also stay in touch with us. And sign up for our newsletter. We're trying to be as transparent and open about this process as possible so that we can move forward, as I said, in a way that's collaborative, representative, and, you know, just one that centers what we as a community need together, which I think is a even brighter future than we've previously been able to imagine.
Well put. Ellie Angram, Executive Director of the Green Village Initiative, operating Reservoir Community Farm and overseeing multiple initiatives at local schools and in neighborhoods all over Bridgeport. We thank you for your effort. Once again, learn more at gogvi.org and get hooked up with the effort. And if you can't go there and meet and learn how to garden or farm, plant some tomatoes of your own, perhaps you can can send a few emails, make a few phone calls, or do something else to help the effort to sustain the Reservoir Community Farm and all of the great efforts that we've heard about on this segment. Ellie, thank you so much, and we'll see you, I promise, the next time we talk on the grounds at the farm. So until then, farewell. Well, as you heard from our introduction, we're sticking around the Park City to meet some other new friends that are doing equally important work as our friends at the Green Village Initiative. Not to try to split hairs in terms of who's doing what that's more important, because any activism toward the better health and wellness of the community is critically important in Bridgeport and everywhere. And with that, it really gives me great pleasure to introduce Alisa Anderson. She is a program coordinator for Bridgeport United Coalition. This organization is aimed to reduce tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use among youth and make Bridgeport a safer, healthier, and drug-free city. And as we're going to talk about in just a few minutes, a looming bigger challenge as the Connecticut legislature and executive leadership discusses the prospect of making adult use and access to cannabis and marijuana legal in this session. So we'll get around to that, Alisa, but let's hear a little bit about you first. Welcome to the program. How did you go about getting hooked up with Bridgeport United Coalition?
Well, I started with Bridgeport United Coalition as a member about 4 years ago. I myself also am a business owner. I own Emerging Voices Production Company. And so now that partnership is represented on the coalition through my daughter, but also just because of the great work that they do and have done throughout the city.
Very good. And we should let folks know that anyone in Bridgeport is invited to participate in Bridgeport United Coalition. They meet on Tuesdays. What is it, the first Tuesday of the month, Alisa?
It's the second and fourth Tuesday of the month that we get together and meet. We are actually a 12-sector coalition. So we're looking for youth, we're looking for parents, business partners, media, school venturing, who are looking to serve the youth, law enforcement, religious sectors, civic sectors, healthcare, local government, and other agencies.
Excellent. Well, as we mentioned, probably one of the biggest looming challenges to an organization that's looking to make Bridgeport a drug-free community is this sort of tightrope walk that's going on now, because the legislature is considering legalizing adult use and possession of marijuana here in Connecticut. As we know, New York just checked the box and are aggressively working toward launching their own adult use legal cannabis initiative there. Rhode Island is fast tracking it. We've got it already in Massachusetts and New Jersey, several other New England states. In a nutshell, Alisa, tell us a little bit about what you want folks to know from the Bridgeport United Coalition's perspective.
What we want them to know from our perspective, particularly from an educational piece, everybody's looking to fast track marijuana and cannabis use, but what they're not saying are the dangers from a scientific standpoint of how cannabis use and THC concentrate affects children under the age of 25 while the brain is still developing. And I think that our youth who are able to read, we need to educate them and give them materials so they can see what it does to the brain for themselves and therefore make better choices and decisions. And we want parents to understand what the cause of this how this can impact their children as well. It's not just a fun recreational use of another substance, and it's something that needs to be talked about.
It's interesting that you mentioned the science of it, Elisa, and noted the disparity between the potential allowances for adult purchase when and if it is legalized for those 21 and over, and yet you rightly noted that the brain development in young adults continues until they're into their mid-20s. So there is that 4 to 5 year window there where individuals who might be able to consume legal cannabis are still potentially having some biological and negative impact on their brain development.
Yes, that is very interesting. So even when you're trying to help college students, you know, and now college looks a whole lot different, but you have parents, health-wise, a college student can stay on their parents' insurance until they're 26 years old. And yet, these are the disparities in ages, you know, whether you're 18 for this, if you're 21 for that, if you're, and we fought so hard with tobacco use to get it from 18 to 21. Mm-hmm. And now here we are again looking to fight this age disparity again.
Yeah.
So it's tough.
I guess as we also have seen from the epidemic use of vaping cartridges and other vaping related substances by young people, even in school classrooms, even down into the early middle school ages, that is also an issue that's way out in front on your radar.
It's absolutely an issue. One of the things about anything that's always tried and what we're really looking at within the bill, like we can't as a coalition lobby, but as a parent, right, when you look at what goes into something, if you're going to legalize it, what are the ramifications to help educate the public and what can help as far as clinical assistance to help someone who may become addicted to using a drug, whether it's opioids, whether it's vaping. And vaping is becoming a greater issue because it looks cool. You know, vaping came with all these different flavors, which is why we're talking about ban the flavoring, because the manufacturers are targeting youth and young adults with the type of flavors they offer. And then, you know, vaping comes in an array of things, whether it's what looks like a lipstick canister, to what looks actually to the stringing of a hoodie. That you can, you know, literally you're sitting there looking like you're chewing on a string while you're in the classroom, but you're actually vaping.
Yep. The ways that the creative minds have gotten together to make it easier to conceal has certainly got to be frustrating for folks like you who are working to try to protect young people from themselves, really. Yeah. You know, you dangle a bright, shiny object and people just tend to want to take a look at it and maybe reach out and touch it. And that's certainly what's happening with these candy flavors and these interesting designs. Yeah. And things. So we feel your pain. So we're going to take a break, Elisa, and we're going to pick up the conversation with Officer Quinones, your a partner over there at the Bridgeport United Coalition. In the meantime, we want to tell folks if they're interested in learning more about what you're doing or maybe using Bridgeport United Coalition's model as a blueprint in their own community, they can certainly be in touch with you or learn more about the cause by going to bridgeportunited.com. So at this point, I want to say thank you, and it was great to meet you. And I think we're going to be circling back and talking to you a little bit more over the summer for a little bit more extended time and learn more about how you're going to be approaching the upcoming school year and hopefully building the coalition's numbers through the strength of our partnership with this media organization. So thank you so much. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you so much.
Yep. And folks, we'll be back right after this break and pick up our conversation with another worthy representative representative of the Bridgeport United Coalition. Stick with us. Hey, do you volunteer for or receive services from any of the hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots organizations in our region? Or maybe you're just looking for ways to help. If your favorite nonprofit is hosting a fundraiser or community building activity, or you'd like to find a nonprofit to support in your neighborhood, just go to our radio station website, hit the events tab, and find one, or discover some of the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. I'm John Voquette, your public affairs director here at Connoisseur Media, and we'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. Homes for the Brave, which has served over 1,400 individuals, assisting them with securing stable income, safe housing, and increasing their self-determination, is hosting its fifth annual For Veterans by Veterans Comedy Night. This event is happening at Vizzano's Four Seasons on Friday, June 4th, beginning at 6 p.m. For the Veterans by Veterans Comedy Night features a dinner, door prize, 50-50 raffle, and a hilarious lineup of comics, all of whom are U.S. military veterans. The event will include seating that meets state guidelines for appropriate in-venue distancing. Tickets and sponsorship opportunities are available now. Just visit homesforthebrave.org/comedy night for details. Well, we're back as promised with another new friend from the Bridgeport United Coalition. It's Officer Sandy Quinones, and she is with the Community Services Division of the Bridgeport Police Department. Sandy, great to meet you.
Great to meet you. Thank you.
So tell me a little bit about what you do as a community service representative of the Bridgeport Police Department.
So our unit, we do a vast things with the community. So that it also includes the youth. My involvement with the youth there, I'm the their instructor as well as the coordinator, where we go into all the middle schools and we talk to the kids about drugs, alcohol, peer pressure, bullying, and many other aspects. I'm also the assistant director for the Bridgeport Police Explorer Program, which is a group of boys and girls between the ages of 13 and 21 that aspire to become either police officers, they want to go to the military, college, want to become attorneys. So, I mean, those are the few things that I do with the youth. Our unit pretty much takes care of the city when it comes to food drives, toy drives, programs for children, young adults, teenagers, as well as adults. Like, you know, we have, I mean, we're starting a food pantry for the seniors. So we're pretty involved.
Very good. Well, I wanted to also take an opportunity for you to promote this new group for women that's happening.
Yes, her. It's Hope, Empowerment, and Respect. We're going to be starting that April 14th for the time being until everything finally opens up in the city. And it's just going to, you know, we're going to talk about everything from respecting yourself to etiquette, college prep. We're going to touch base on a million things. We're going to have different speakers coming in, including doctors, to come and talk to the young ladies, college professors, you name it, we're going to have it. And it's also open to transgender, non-binary. We're open.
Had a brief conversation with Elisa Anderson, and she was talking about the challenges that are happening with the upcoming vote and the possible introduction of legalized access to cannabis here in Connecticut, as well as the problems and challenges that she's seeing with youth vaping. You're out there on the front lines. I'd like to just ask you about what you're seeing as a police officer and what your concerns are.
So as a police officer, and I used to work for Narcotics and Vice many moons ago, and I did work for Statewide Narcotics as well. And the thing is that the marijuana that we have nowadays that you see that the kids claim that, you know, that they're purchasing from these dealers, is good weed. In reality is, and I also teach this in college level, that a lot of the weed that they're, or the marijuana that they're purchasing, they're laced with formaldehyde, you name it. They're laced with different things where it actually eventually will cause damage to the brains. And as you know, kids at that age, teenage kids, their brain is still developing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we did talk about that. And even the fact that when and if marijuana is legalized here in Connecticut for anyone 21 and over, Elisa was astute to point out that the science indicates that the brain still continues to develop into the mid-20s. So any access and heavy use of even legalized marijuana and cannabis products could still have negative impact on brain development.
Absolutely. I mean, and you see it in, you know, a lot of the PowerPoints that I do with, you know, college students and high school students, you know, I pretty much break it down to, okay, this is what they look like before. And here goes a current picture of them. And, you know, and sometimes these kids end up dying from it because they don't know what they're inhaling. They don't know what they're taking in or ingesting, because it's not just smoking and inhaling it. It's also, you know, baking it, you know, into brownies or some kind of cookies or just some type of confection.
So how about in terms of youth vaping? Is it something that is concerning to you in terms of, you know, how many people are doing it more as a novelty than because they're becoming addicted to nicotine?
Yeah, so, you know, they have these great pictures up at the convenience stores. When you go to these convenience stores, they have, you know, the e-cigs, they have all sorts of stuff. And then when you go into some of these smoke shops, they have, you know, the ones that are flavored. So, of course, the kids are going to say, well, hey, they say that this is better than using cigarettes. So I'm going, you know, this is safer. So I'm going to get this. And, oh, it's Tutti Frutti or it's cotton candy flavored or whatever the case may be. And that's what the kids are looking at. They're looking at that saying, this is, you know, it's not bad. It's when in reality it really is.
Good. Well, in the last few minutes that we have with you, Sandy, please let the folks that are listening know how they might be able to get involved and help. There's probably a lot of folks that are listening that either have adult children or don't have children. Maybe they're too young to have children, but they still understand that this is a really important issue for everyone in the community to get behind. How can they help the Bridgeport United Coalition?
So, first of all, you know, I would love for more parents to get involved in their kids' lives when it comes to drugs, talking about, you know, doing the talk, doing the drug talk, you know. And sometimes if parents need help with explaining it to their kids, then, you know, they're more than welcome to contact us and we can explain to them how to introduce it to them. Or if they need our help, you know, we're more than happy to help them. You know, but if they're, see, and when I do my teachings, I like to include administrators, school administrators, as well as the parents, because they need to open their eyes as well. So, I mean, if they get more involved and they start talking, you know, at a young age with these kids, because, I mean, these kids are starting, you know, the marijuana, the vaping at fourth and fifth grade. So it's, you know, when the parents are not around, of course, you know, the kids are going to say, hey, you know, this is a little bit of freedom that I have. So the parents need to be more aware of what's going on and more aware of the people that the kids are hanging out with as well.
Good. Well, we appreciate you taking some time to bring us up to speed on what's happening with the coalition. We want people to know that the Bridgeport United Coalition is working to reduce tobacco, alcohol, and other drug use among youth and make Bridgeport a safer, healthier, and drug-free city. They'd love for you to participate in their meetings on the second and fourth Tuesdays of the month, and you can learn more about what they're doing and how you can get involved by going to BridgeportUnited.com. I want to thank Elisa Anderson, Program Coordinator, and Officer Sandy Quinonez, one of Bridgeport's finest with the Community Service Division, for representing Bridgeport United Coalition this morning on For the People. Thank you, Sandy, and we'll talk to you again soon. Well, we're pleased to be wrapping up with Mary Woods, another new acquaintance of ours here at the award-winning For the People. She's on the event steering committee for the Fund for Women and Girls 2021 virtual celebration. This a program of the Fairfield County Community Foundation, on which she also serves with the board. Very exciting event coming up later this week on April 16th at 5:30 p.m. We're going to hear all about it. But first, Mary, tell us a little bit about how you came to know the Fairfield County Community Foundation and the Fund for Women and Girls, and you're getting involved with it now over 8 years ago, right?
Yes. Well, John, I had had a long and pretty intense career in corporate investment banking, and I was fortunate in being able to retire from that a little over 8 years ago. And I had always looked forward to a period in my life when I would have the time and capacity to start giving back to my community. I'd always felt that was a very important thing for me to do. And I explored around and was looking for something that I could feel passionate about. And through talking to a lot of people, discovered the Fund for Women and Girls and have been very involved with them since then.
Great. And through that experience, you came to know the folks better at the foundation, and apparently they liked your energy too.
Well, yeah, so the Fairfield County's Community Foundation is an awesome organization as well, and they both complement each their work together very much.
Excellent. Well, for folks that may be like you and are nearing retirement or are at that point in their lives where they're looking to give back, talk a little bit, especially about why they might want to consider giving some of their energy to the Women and Girls Initiative there at the foundation.
Sure. We've actually, the Fund for Women and Girls has been around for over two decades and has granted more than $8 million or about $800,000 a year. And we really have been totally focused on improving the futures of women and girls in the tens and thousands throughout Fairfield County. And as I think we all know, when you improve the lives of an individual woman or girl, it has a huge ripple effect in improving the lives of families and communities. And we really have been very strong in bringing individuals and organizations together to invest in sustainable solutions that support the health, safety, and economic security of women and girls throughout the county. And we stay in close contact with our communities and conduct in-depth research to make sure we are very current and well-informed about needs and opportunities. And I think most importantly, we're always looking for how we need to pivot and do things better and change. And increasingly, for example, we're bringing a lot of different community organizations together to leverage each other's strengths in identifying and attacking systemic barriers and issues. And with funding being, you know, increasingly problematic these days from state and federal traditional resources, it's increasingly important that we really leverage off of each other and not keep creating de novo nonprofit organizations.
Yeah. Well, your involvement now with, like I said, for over 8 years with the event that's coming up later this week has also given you the opportunity to meet some of the youngest women and girls who were with the organization when you first came on. Have any of the ones who you first met in your first weeks and months with the organization grown into being supporters or involved with the fund now as adult professionals who may have stayed in or come back to the community?
Yes, we have had several examples of that, and not just in coming back to the fund, but also just in seeing so many of the women and girls who really have had their lives transformed by some of the programs that we've either funded or helped to create and fund, really going on to leadership positions within their communities and forming businesses that employ people that were in the same predicaments they had been previously in their lives. And so we really see a huge domino effect in both the lives we've touch through the grant making and programs, as well as the people involved in the fund. And it's been very rewarding.
Yeah. Have you made any friends or at least acquaintances with any of these younger women who may look to you for a little bit of mentorship, or at least, as an example of how they might like to, conduct their professional lives?
Yes, absolutely. And that is particularly rewarding, of course. Yeah, there are a number of wonderful examples of that.
Oh, tell us, I know it's kind of hard to pick from among the best stories that you can tell, but give us an example of a young woman that you met maybe a little earlier on who is now really exemplifying what the Fund for Women and Girls is trying to do.
I'd say I can think of one particular example where I've worked very closely with her for all these years, and I think have really helped up and grow by just leading by example. I mean, I'm older and have had a lot of experience. I've also faced my fair share of trials and tribulations and what life has to throw at us, but I'm open about that and at peace with it. And I think just being able to talk about my own experiences and hardships very openly, but also demonstrate, how strength comes out of that and passion comes out of that, and that it's okay to have an open heart and have confidence in oneself despite how you've tripped up in the past or been less confident, and in certain cases those women have graduated on to increasing levels of responsibility and now are, as I said, assuming leadership positions in different organizations that are focused on promoting equity and giving back to the communities.
Yeah, well, challenges as a teen or a 20-something can be so overwhelming and all-consuming. It's something we may never figure out how to handle, but if we're lucky, we do once we get a little bit older. So it's great to know how willing you are to step in and take an active interest when interest is expressed on the part of a young young protege or a newcomer to the program. That's why we really want people to come out later this week and support the virtual celebration that's happening on April 16th, beginning at about 5:30. And as the head of the event steering committee, we want to go to you to tell us all the important things that folks need to know in these last few days before they can log on and be part of this celebration. Tell us about the event, Mary.
Sure. Well, this is an annual event that has been going on for, again, decades. And it significantly supports the work that the Fund for Women and Girls does. And it typically attracts over 800 very enthusiastic supporters every year to learn more about what the fund's been up to, and also to hear from the women whose lives have been transformed by the different programs that we have initiated and funded as well. And we've had amazing keynote speakers in the past, such as Dr. Maya Angelou, Madeleine Albright, Gloria Steinem, Abby Wambach, Jean King, and Tracy Ellis Ross. And this year, we are really delighted to have Margaret Atwood as our keynote speaker. Mm-hmm. And, of course, she's very well known for her very distinct and outspoken perspective on feminism and views on powers, on power, how women versus power.
Sure.
And she's written more than 50 books of fiction, poetry, and critical essays, and her most recent, The Testaments, won the 2019 Booker Prize. But I think what a lot of listeners will be able to resonate with is that The Handmaid's Tale is a book that she wrote, which, of course, was the basis for the very critically acclaimed and popular television series, The Handmaid's Tale. And we'll also be spotlighting our newest signature initiative, which is called the EMMY Coalition. Mm-hmm. And EMMY stands for Empowerment, Mindfulness, Motivation, and Education. And we're so excited about this. We have partnered with just a fantastic team at Optimus Healthcare in Bridgeport. And we're really, the purpose of the program is to connect girls and women with the tools they need to succeed in life. And we've hired a fantastic program director who herself immigrated to Bridgeport, not being able to speak English when she was around 11 years old. And she'll be one of our speakers at the program. And she has recently completed her a doctorate in healthcare and is so vibrant and so excited to be able to reaching out to so many girls and women that have had the same experiences that she's had.
Well, Mary, I know we're excited to actually meet the head of the EMMY program, and we're going to come back and do a full segment on that at some point in the near future. And we really thank you for tuning us in and getting us oriented as we get ready for bringing on the last few registrants for the Fund for Women and Girls 2021 virtual celebration. It's happening on April 16th at 5:30. You can go to fccfoundation.org and click on the link for the Fund for Women and Girls for more information. And we wish you best of luck with the event and continued good luck as you serve the foundation, Mary, and the Fund for Women and Girls. And we look forward to talking with you again soon. In the meantime, thank you so much for your time this morning.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for an issue, a guest, or a PSA relevant to the audience and community served by our radio station, you must make a request for consideration in writing to me via email at john.voquette@connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast. Our public file detailing the many critical community and state issues addressed on For the People can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Join us again this time next week for more conversation and information on the award-winning For the People. And don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.